From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Hello and welcome. I can't believe we're heading into another weekend already. Time is flying at the moment. Building work starts on Monday, and of course I'm not really ready, but at some point you've just got to jump in and get started. So I'm hoping we can get as much done as possible, and then the builder's just going to have to come back if we have to wait for some things to arrive. I'm a Brit, so I can't help but mention the weather. It is blowing a hoolie here. Windy, windy, windy. Went down to see the sea today and almost got blown away. Winds are up to about 60 miles per hour, and I think that's probably the definition of a roiling sea that I saw. Very, very churny and choppy. Probably not the best day for a dip, so I resisted going in. It's actually very warm when you get out of that wind, so it would have been quite nice, but possibly a bit dangerous. It's been an interesting week and possibly an eye-opening one, excuse the pun. I went for a very thorough and lengthy eye test this week, and the ophthalmologist found some potentially very interesting things. I know I need reading glasses, and I do occasionally use them. I went for an eye test when I was in France, probably about a year ago, and was prescribed some varifocals that I just couldn't get on with. So I took those along with me, and they were horrified at the substandard quality of the lenses and weren't at all surprised that I gave up on using them almost immediately. What was really interesting, though, was that he said that I really needed glasses for my distance sight as well, which I guess I've kind of known, but not really given any priority to. I just kind of felt that that slightly sort of not crystal clear focus in the distance was just part of getting older. And actually, it's not a huge deal, really. But the big thing was, and this applies to both the nearsighted and the distance vision, was that he uncovered a convergence issue, which I don't completely understand yet, but apparently can be corrected with the use of prisms in the lenses. The really interesting thing about it, and I'm really hoping this is going to be true, is that he thinks it's the biggest reason behind my headaches. If you've heard me talking about my headaches or migraines, you'll know that I quite often use those terms interchangeably because I actually struggle in identifying what they are. They're almost always behind one of my eyes, and I've just always identified those types of headaches as migraines. But he thinks that actually they're more likely caused from these problems with my eyes, and the timing of when they started in my teens potentially does correspond with that. It's probably the case that not all of them are caused by that, but the prospect of slashing the number of headaches, migraines, whatever they are, that I get is pretty exciting. He said that he really wished that he'd been doing this eye test when I was a teenager and would have prescribed the same glasses that he's prescribing now, pretty much. I've got to say, it's a bit of a shock thinking about wearing glasses pretty well all the time for somebody who has never really worn them and only occasionally worn them for things like reading and that close focusing work. I'm not really anti the idea, but I can't help thinking about some of the practical things that people who have to wear glasses all the time face. Like I say, it's not a bad thing. It's just a weird thing to think, quite a big change in my life. But we shall see. Watch this space. Wouldn't it be great if this means that I get far fewer headaches going forward? It will be a bit annoying thinking that I've spent the best part of my life with all these headaches when I didn't need to, but there you go. It's better to find it out now than never. So I'm thinking and hoping that the very expensive eye test will actually pay great dividends going forward. I have, of course, been in the sea once this week, only once. I was hoping to go more often, but hopefully more next week when I think the weather's going to improve. I did see a post in the local Blue Tits group that I'm now a member of that there's a very, very early morning swim under what's known as a flower moon. I need to Google that. Probably won't make it, as I think the meetup is at 4:55 a.m., which is the kind of thing that I'd think would be a great idea the evening before, but not so much when I'm struggling to wake up at crazy o'clock in the morning. We shall see. You never know. If I go, I will take photos to prove that I've been. Now, one of the things that cold water sea swimming is supposed to be good for is lipedema. Which brings me neatly onto this week's repeat episode. Mendy Staggs is the first lippy lady I interviewed, and she really got me thinking about and interested in lipedema. I went on to interview many more, and it's definitely one of those underdiagnosed and not well enough known about conditions that really needs raising in awareness, because there are significant improvements you can make to the disorder through diet and lifestyle changes. Chatting to all these lovely lippy ladies got me thinking about my own legs. And although I haven't been officially diagnosed, I am pretty convinced that I have lipedema. So I'm hoping that all this wonderful sea swimming is going to help. If you think it might be something that you have, then do check out the show notes. I've tried to amass as much information and links as I can to help you find out a bit more about it. But Mendy does a really good job of explaining the ins and outs of the disorder in this podcast. So I hope you enjoy it. I'm going to hand you over now to my previous self. And until this time next week, I hope you have a very wonderful weekend. Take very, very good care, and I'll see you soon. This week's extraordinary woman is Mendy Staggs. Mendy is 46 years old and has been married to her college sweetheart for 27 years. They have four beautiful children, one girl and three boys, and a small hobby farm in rural Missouri where they grow honeybees, mushrooms, heirloom vegetables, goats and chickens. Mendy is a baker and cake decorator, and she teaches junior high and high school cooking classes at her local homeschool co-op. Mendy has used her cooking and teaching experience to coach women with lipedema in the keto way of eating. Mendy is passionate about keto and wants all women who suffer from lipedema to find the same physical, emotional, and spiritual healing she has experienced. Mendy has a condition called lipedema that causes her pain and fluid retention. The swelling is well controlled and the pain is nearly gone. Keto is her new way of life, and Mendy is excited to see where this keto journey will take her. She received her training as a keto coach from the Noakes Foundation's Nutrition Network. She serves as a faculty member and facilitator for the Beyond Lipedema Masterclass and Mini Masterclass, and she is a coach with Lipedema Simplified. It was a real pleasure chatting to Mendy and finding out more about lipedema. I can actually say it properly now, after fluffing it up multiple times when we recorded. There's some kind of weird glitch going on with Mendy's mic and or recording software, and it ate the odd word or part of words she was saying. Nothing I could do about it, bar getting cross, of course, and it won't mean that you miss what she's saying. I do hope you enjoy our conversation and find it as interesting as I did. Welcome, Mendy, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Daisy?
I'm good. It's funny, actually. I've just been editing Carolina's episode and listening to myself full of cold. I sounded really snotty.
Oh,
and
no.
So it just reminded me that I'm clear now, which is nice. It takes a while sometimes, doesn't it? These colds, they just drag on and on and on.
Oh, yes. Feeling better then. Good. I'm glad.
Yes, definitely. So, as is customary, why don't you tell us a bit about you?
About me. Well, I am, you know, everybody always wants to know how old I am. Well, I'm 46. I'll be 47 in February. And I am married. My husband and I have been married for 28 years. We have four children. From the oldest is 27 and the youngest is 13. We live on a small farm, hobby farm in rural Missouri.
Nice.
We're about 20 minutes away from our biggest town, which is only about 50,000 people. So very small town America. And I have lipedema. That's what I'm going to talk about today. And I discovered the keto way of eating after I had found out that I have lipedema and that it might help with my lipedema. I've been overweight. Actually, I've been obese ever since I was about 15 years old. I didn't think that there was any possibility that I could ever be thin and normal, especially after learning about my lipedema diagnosis. But keto changed everything for me. So I'm assuming that's why you invited me here to talk to you, Daisy.
Yes, I remember. I think what caught my attention the first time was a great picture. I think you had a photo shoot. Was it for your birthday last year?
It would have been. It was actually when I was working. I'm still working as a keto coach, and I needed some really great professional photographs to show what I looked like now. And so it would have been, it was a year ago this past fall that I had those done.
Right. Yes, they're fantastic.
Thank you.
You said that you've been obese since you were 15.
Mm-hmm.
What led to that?
Well, you know, I've always been bigger than I should be for whatever reason. Even as a child, my height and weight were both always off the top of the growth scale. And I always was just told, oh, you're big boned or you're very muscular. And I was. That's true that I was. And even though my weight put me in the obese range, most people wouldn't have thought of me as being obese until I had, I probably hit about 18. And when I got pregnant, then I really gained a lot of weight. But I've been a size, in the U.S., size 16 since I was about 15 or 16 years old. And then when I got pregnant with my first child at 18, I got to a size 20 or 22. And I would diet and I would lose back down to like a 16 again for, you know, about a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And then I would start gaining back even while I was still dieting. I would start gaining back and my body just wanted to hover about that size 20 or 22. The largest I've been is a size 24 US and I just stayed there. So I really don't know what it was. I didn't eat or didn't seem to eat more than other people around me. And I really started noticing the growth, especially in my lower body, about the time of puberty. I was actually just 10 years old when I hit puberty full force. And that's when my legs just kind of grew uncontrollably. But even as a little girl, I remember even being in like kindergarten and first grade and all the girls were wearing these cute little rain boots and mine wouldn't fit up over my calves, you know. And like I said, you wouldn't look at me and think of me as a very overweight child. I just had big legs. And when I hit puberty, they grew even more. So I really can't answer that question.
Mm.
What made me obese, except for lipedema? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, some people have some kind of clear realization. Perhaps, you know, they started eating differently or mm-hmm. something happened to lead them down that track. And often it's just a case of going into puberty, isn't it, when things change. And suddenly, regardless of what you've been eating, things start just changing in your bodies and can lead to weight gain.
Right.
Just luck of the draw. When did you get your lipedema diagnosis? And was that something that you'd already suspected you had and went along asking about that? Or, you know, how did that come about? Was it something that was suggested to you?
Well, like I said, I'd always had big legs and my mom has always had big legs. And my mom she might have possibly been overweight after menopause for a little while, but most of her life she's been a normal weight. But her top half was very thin and almost emaciated in some instances when she was thinner. You know, you could see her collarbones and you could see all of her ribs in the front and the back. But yet her legs looked like they belonged to a different body. And she swelled really badly and had varicose veins. And she just was always struggled with her legs. She didn't want to wear shorts. And my legs looked very similar, but my weight was a little more evenly distributed, even though my legs were obviously bigger than they should have been, didn't match my body. I was so thankful when two-piece swimsuits came out that you could buy the tops and the bottoms in different sizes because my top and my bottom never match. And it used to be that if you wanted to wear a two-piece swimsuit, you know, even like a tankini or whatever, you had to buy two different sets and trade. And so I was really glad when that actually did come out that you could buy the tops and the bottoms separate because I never matched and neither did my mom. So I didn't hear the word lipedema until I got really frustrated about 5 years ago because my mom and I have always struggled with our lower halves and always swollen. Our feet swell and our legs swell, mostly our legs, not as much our feet, but in the heat and just standing and, you know, my legs would hurt and she would complain about her legs hurting. So because she had the same symptoms that I did, I never thought of it as being abnormal. I just thought it was part of being a woman and that I'd inherited my shape from her. So it didn't really dawn on me that there was something wrong with us until about, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when we were at a family reunion and I had a cousin who was very overweight, obese, and she carried her weight centrally, you know, it was all around her middle and she had thin legs and ankles. And we were all sitting out in July in Dallas, Texas in the summer heat. And it was crazy hot. It was like 108 degrees and I'm swelling and I'm miserable and my legs are swollen and my ankles are swollen and I'm propping my feet up on a chair out there sitting by the poolside and my mom is miserable and I look over at my cousin and she's got, even though she's very overweight, she has these beautifully thin ankles and you can see all of the veins and all of the bones and ligaments and tendons and everything in her feet and legs that you can't see in mine and she's bigger than I am. And it was that moment, that was my aha moment that there's something wrong with me and there's something wrong with my mother. And so I was determined to find what was wrong. And so I started searching on the internet to find out what was the matter with both of us. And I also have a daughter, and I didn't want her to suffer the same fate that my mom and I both had with this, you know, whatever mystery condition it was that we had. And so I even joked with my mom, one of these days they're going to figure out what's wrong with our legs, and they're going to name the disorder after us because apparently this doesn't exist, you know. But that wasn't the case. I started searching, and my mom is a nurse, and my husband is a nurse, so I have a lot of medical background by association. So I understand a lot of medical terminology. So I knew that lymphedema was not the right word, but it was the only thing that I could think of to search for. So I started researching lymphedema on the internet, and I came across the word lipedema. I found lots of resources online, and one of them was the Lipedema Project online, their website. And when I started reading and looking at pictures of these women with lipedema, I'm like, oh my goodness, that looks like my body. These women look like me. And even though I'm a size 22 version and my mom's a size 10 version, I could find pictures of both of our legs on the internet. And I had tears. I'm like, we're not the only ones who are suffering like this. And then I started thinking about my mom's aunts, who my grandpa's sisters, who all have this shape and all have these big legs. And I'm like, this is in our family. This is hereditary. And probably 90% of the women on that side of my family have this. And I knew then that it was lipedema. And it just so happened that Catherine Sayo, the director of the Lipedema Project, had created a beautiful documentary called The Disease They Call Fat. And it was free to watch at that time that I had discovered all of this. And I put it up on my mom's TV and we watched it together. And I cried through the whole thing because these women were telling my story. So I took the information to my doctor, and he'd never heard of lipedema. Hmm. A lot of doctors, especially in the United States, have never heard the term lipedema, don't know what it is. In fact, when my mom talked to her doctor, he said, no, you mean lipedemia. You have fat in your blood. And I said, no, this is lipedema. I said, it's in the same family of disorders as Durkheim's disease and Madelung's disease. Well, he'd heard of those two, but he'd never heard the term lipedema. And so he researched it, but I hear that a lot by women who take, especially in the United States, who take this information to their doctors. Either they've heard that it's a crazy made up internet disease, or they've never heard of it, or they think they're mispronouncing lymphedema, or they think they're mispronouncing lipedemia, which is, you know, as high cholesterol has nothing to do with lipedema, the medical disorder. So I actually didn't get a definitive diagnosis until about a year ago when I switched primary care doctors and took the information again to my primary care doctor, and he actually put the diagnosis on my chart. It's pretty much meaningless here in the U.S. for me, at least in the area where I live, because insurance doesn't consider it, you know, there's not an insurance code for it. So, you know, they can't use that diagnosis for any of my treatments. But because I have a doctor who believes that this is real, it does occur. I've educated him to help me treat this condition. He's willing to work around whatever diagnosis he can put on whatever to get the compression prescribed or the manual lymphatic drainage prescribed. So it's very helpful for me to have a primary care doctor who's willing to work with me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And not only that, but he's also not just pro-keto, but he prescribes the ketogenic way of eating to his patients, and he follows carnivore himself.
Oh, even better.
He's very well-versed. Yeah.
He's on board on all sorts of different levels. Perhaps you could just go back, and like you say, it's so easy to mispronounce it or to get it mixed up with other things. You know, what is the difference between lymphedema, lipedema? What is the difference? You said that's where you started looking. That was a term you'd heard of.
Right.
So it's probably a term that other people have heard of and easily mix up.
Right. Well, lymphedema, I'm not an expert on lymphedema. I can say that I'm an expert on lipedema because I live it every day. I'm not a medical, you know, I don't have a medical degree or anything, but lymphedema is an impairment in lymphatic function that causes lymphatic fluid to accumulate within the tissue. So the lymphatic system that normally helps circulate the fluid within your body, and I'm not talking about blood, I'm talking about lymph fluid, the clear fluid that we have. It allows that fluid to accumulate and doesn't help circulate that. So anytime you have swelling, like if you've been on your feet all day, and you notice that your ankles are a bit swollen at the end of the day, that means that at some point your lymphatic system was not able to keep up with your standing and working all day or whatever. And whereas our cardiovascular system has a nice big pump in our heart that pumps the blood around and around and around our bodies, your lymphatic system doesn't have its own pump. So it relies on the muscles and the movement of the body to pump that fluid around, you know, to help keep it moving. So, you know, you could have any number of problems. You could have leaky lymphatic vessels, or you could have a problem with the pump, or you could have an overload of fluid from maybe congestive heart failure. A lot of times people with congestive heart failure, their lymphatic system can't keep up with the fluid that's not being pumped because of the heart not pumping properly or efficiently. And a lot of times what you'll see with lymphedema is that when you look up lymphedema, you'll see that it happens to someone who's had cancer surgery. So they've had lymph nodes removed, like if they've had breast cancer, they've had a breast removed and some lymph nodes removed, then they don't have those lymph nodes to help. There's damage done to their lymphatic system. So like the arm where the side of their body that they had breast surgery will swell uncontrollably. And so one arm will be much larger than the other arms. Or if they've had surgery somewhere near their groin or they've had abdominal surgery, sometimes one leg will be affected and it will grow larger than the other because the lymph fluid is not moving properly. And that's probably the manifestation of lymphedema that most people are familiar with. Even a layman has seen something like that. And a lot of times they'll wear a sleeve to compress to help keep that. And that's a horrible disfiguring disorder. But lipedema doesn't originate with the lymphatic system. It's a fat accumulation disorder. And my experience that I related to you, that it started basically at puberty, probably pre-puberty because I had the hormones kick in before that, is when we see the greatest change. So some people, their lipedema manifests itself at puberty, some with pregnancy, some not until menopause. But it's characterized by an overgrowth of fat or an accumulation of fat, and generally starts in the lower body. So women with lipedema have this disproportionate shape of being smaller in the upper area, and then their legs are very large compared to the rest of their body, which is exactly what I saw in my mother all of my growing up, was this almost emaciated upper half, and then her legs looked like she was wearing I Dream of Jeannie pants, mm-hmm. You know, because they were swollen up with fat. It's fat that accumulates. And on top of the fat being there, it's not normal fat. Like normally fat is soft and very smooth consistency. Lipedema fat is nodular. When you feel of it, you might feel lumps and bumps, and it feels like a beanbag chair, or, you know, a bag of peas is sometimes how it's described. Or if you are in a later stage, it might even feel like a bag of like frozen broccoli, or you might even have hard fibrotic nodules within the fat that are very large. And it's also, most of the time, women experience a lot of pain with it. And we're not sure why that pain occurs. Some people think it's because the fibrotic tissue entraps some of the nerves, but that lipedema tissue is very sensitive. Women with lipedema are also very prone to bruising. They bruise very easily. And the other thing that's interesting about lipedema is that the fat that accumulates in the lower half of the body, the lipedema fat, is also known to be resistant to diet and exercise. So there are women who have lipedema who have had gastric bypass surgery, and they will lose weight, but their legs will stay big. When I found out about lipedema, I was actually pretty, it was mixed emotion. It's like, aha, this is what I have. This is what my mom has. But oh no, there's nothing we can do about it, mm-hmm. because dieting and exercising isn't going to make any difference.
It's a real double whammy, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Also with lipedema, like I said, you've got these hard fibrotic nodules, this disproportion in size. Some women, their arms are actually affected too, and I'm one of them. So, you know, it may start in the legs, but then the arms begin to grow. And generally it's the upper arms, but it can extend down to the wrists. And if you've ever seen anybody, which you might have and you might have not, because a lot of women with lipedema keep their lower halves covered. They don't wear shorts because they're embarrassed by the way their legs look. But if you've ever seen anybody who looks like they have been wearing a ponytail elastic around their ankle, and they have this cuff at their ankle where it's like it balloons above that, and their foot looks relatively normal, but the fat just kind of balloons up from the ankle. That's a classic sign of lipedema. Some women with lipedema, and I'm one of them, the worst part of my lipedema is from my waist. So like from the top of my hip bone to my knee. So I actually look like I have that cuff, like I've been wearing an elastic band just below my knee. And then the fat kind of balloons up from there. When it's really bad, if I'm very swollen, and lipedema tissue does tend to retain fluid and swell too, which is why we know there's a lymphatic component as well. The lymphatics aren't able to keep up with the whatever the fluid leakage that happens in the tissue. But when I've been standing for a long period of time, sometimes that fat will actually bubble over my knee there. And so I have a little fold over. And then I do also have the ankle cuff, but not to as great of extent as some women have. And if you are interested in finding out if you might have lipedema, a great resource is the Lipedema Project website. There's a quiz on there that you can take that will tell you if you need to talk to your doctor about whether or not you might have lipedema. And there's also great information. It's estimated that as high as 11% of post-puberty females have lipedema. And I'm going to actually read that quote that off of here. That means close to 17 million women in the U.S. alone could possibly have lipedema. And there are some medical professionals believe that amount may even be higher. And as many as 350 million women worldwide may be affected by lipedema. But that, again, because we have such poor knowledge in the medical community of this disorder.
It's probably a lot higher.
Yeah, it may even be a lot higher than that. So that's an estimate that is made. But, you know, this is it's definitely something that women should know about. If you think about 11% of women, that means that you probably know somebody who has lipedema, and you might even know somebody who has lipedema that doesn't even know it. Some people with lipedema also have the complication of obesity on top of their lipedema. And when they resolve the obesity, that's when the lipedema is shown. You know, that's when they are able to see, oh, there's something wrong. And that would be the case with that person with gastric bypass, of course, that they didn't know that they had lipedema until they lost all the rest of the weight that they had. And then they're left with the lipedema tissue. So yeah, it was very disheartening to think that it was relieving to know that it wasn't my fault that I was the way I was, but it was also very disheartening to think that there wasn't anything that I could do about it. But there was one solution that was offered in the U.S., and that was tumescent liposuction, very specific type of liposuction that works for removing lipedema tissue. And there's not just any doctor who knows how to do it. They have to be specially trained to do this because they have to do the type that spares the lymph nodes, especially because of the lymphatic, it spares the lymphatic system. But insurance companies don't cover it. Lipedema is not covered. And there's no way I could afford to have a surgery like that. And on top of that, I'm not even sure that I would want to have that that much assault on my body. I've been through surgeries before, and it's a long recovery. I've never had liposuction, but I just don't think that's something that I would want to do. And so when I found out about lipedema and went, aha, this is what's wrong with me, even if I could have afforded to have the surgery, I'm not sure that I would have chosen to do it just because of the major assault that it is on your body. It's a lot of not just pain, but inflammation that you deal with and a long healing process and the possibility of getting an infection after that. And then there's also the possibility that the lipedema tissue can grow back again. So, you know, it's not even possibly a long-term solution.
Yeah, it's not a guaranteed.
Right. There are even people who have the surgery who it's not successful for them. They end up with more problems from the surgery than they did before the surgery. So, you know, it wasn't something that I thought I would even ever consider having. But I wanted to find out everything that I could about lipedema. And so I subscribed, because of that documentary, I subscribed to the emails from the Lipedema Project, and I subscribed to emails from the FDRS, the Fat Disease Research Society, and I started researching everything I could get my hands on. And because I have this medical knowledge by association and understand all these big medical terms, I was reading research papers about it. And I got an email about a year after I learned the term lipedema. I got an email from the Lipedema Project website that they were going to have a webinar about keto and lipedema. And I didn't know what keto was, but I wanted to learn everything I could about lipedema. So I decided I would attend that webinar. And it was an audio webinar with slides, just like you were attending a lecture. And what I found out was that keto was a way of eating. And I'd been through every diet on the planet. So I'm like, oh, good grief. Another diet? Are you got to be kidding? One. You know, and diet doesn't work for lipedema anyway. So why am I even bothering to mess with this? But the pictures that I was seeing on these slides were women who weighed over 500 pounds, who had lost over 200 pounds eating keto, and their lipedema had obviously improved. And in women who weighed 300 pounds, who were down to 150 pounds. And I'm like, if these women who are much bigger than I am can do this, then maybe it would work for me too. I also, about that same time, got a picture posted on Facebook that was from another family reunion. And that day, that family reunion, I felt like I looked good. And I know that women can relate to that. You have these days that you just feel like you look good. You got your makeup done right and your hair done right, and you like your outfit and you've got the right jewelry on and you just feel good about yourself. Mm-hmm. And then my aunt posted these pictures of me on Facebook at that family reunion. I'm like, oh my gosh, I look terrible. My face is swollen.
Oh, that's the worst thing, isn't it? Yeah. When you've gone out thinking one thing and then, yeah, you just see a whole different image in a photograph. How does right. that work? It's awful. Yeah, I've done that.
It's so terrible. And I'm looking at my legs, and my legs look like tree trunks, you know, in this picture. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to do something. I've got to do something. So it was right after I had heard the webinar on keto for lipedema that I saw these pictures come out. And my husband and I had just booked our flights for our 25th anniversary trip. We were going to Costa Rica in January, and it's hot in Costa Rica in January. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, I'm going to be swollen and miserable this whole time if I don't do something. And so I wanted to be not just thinner for our trip, but I wanted to be healthier. I wanted to feel better. I wanted to not be swollen. And so I started keto, and I didn't tell anybody about it. I was afraid to tell my mom or my husband or my kids, because I have been through this time and time again. Oh, Mindy's on another diet, you know, yet another diet, you know. And so I didn't want the eye rolls. I also didn't want to have to admit that if it didn't work, that it was my fault. Because, you know, I carried a lot of that guilt of constantly dieting and then gaining the weight back. And I would lose a little bit and start on a good path and then start gaining it back. I know you know what I'm talking about, Daisy. I know you've been there. And I know a lot of the women who listen to this podcast have also been there.
And of course, you get that little extra bonus, don't you? Every time you come off a diet, you not only gain what you lost, but a little bit more.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
It's awful. It's just so disheartening.
Well, in my case, I would, because my babies are all spread out in age, they're 27, 22, 17, and 13. So I had a baby like every 5 years. I would have my baby, have the postpartum weight, be breastfeeding. So they'd tell me that I couldn't diet, breastfeed my baby for 2 years. When I'd get them weaned, then I would go on a diet and start losing weight. And I'd lose down, 30 or 40 pounds, 50 pounds at the most. And then I'd get pregnant again. And so I would have to start right back over again, and gain the weight back during pregnancy. And I did that pattern for 20 years. Mm. You know, that was my pattern for 20 years. And at the same time, my legs continued to grow. Even though I was losing weight, my legs were continuing to grow.
Can I ask you a couple of things?
Sure.
One, is it exclusively a problem that women suffer from, or do men get it too? Because it sounds, from everything you've been saying, it sounds like it's at least a predominantly female condition.
It is predominantly female. We can't exclude all men, because men who are on some type of hormone altering drug can sometimes get lipedema as well. If they're possibly doing hormone therapy for sex change operation, then lipedema can show up. Or if they're on some type of a drug that suppresses their testosterone and alters their hormones.
Okay, so it's definitely linked to female hormones.
Definitely linked.
Or a lack of right. male hormones.
Right, yeah, it's linked to female hormones or a lack of male hormones. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can't exclude all men, but pretty much it's all women who have this. It's very rare that a man would get it. And a man under normal circumstances, shouldn't get it.
And cynically, maybe, but it does seem to be time after time that conditions that affect women are the ones that seem to get a little bit overlooked, should we say.
Especially when you're talking about fat women. You know, we bear a lot of that shame that it's, you know, it's our fault that we're fat, you know. And that was the thing that really spoke to me in that documentary I was talking about. It's called Lipedema, the disease they call fat. It's not your fault. And I'm like, wow, it's not my fault. And so when I started on keto, I was determined to do keto as perfectly as possible. And when I first started it, I didn't understand how it was any different than any other low carb diet I'd ever been on. Because I'd done Atkins before, you know, and wasn't real successful. I mean, I was successful with Atkins. It worked really well, but then it stopped working. And now I know why. From what I know about the ketogenic way of eating, I understand why I didn't do well with, you know, with continuing on with Atkins. Because I was, you know, not thinking about the carbohydrates that were in things like ketchup or barbecue sauce. And I wasn't thinking about that, you know, I couldn't really continue to increase my carbohydrates until I hit a weight loss plateau, you know, and then back off, because my carbohydrate threshold is essentially zero. Mm-hmm. You know, the lower my carbohydrate level is, the better. But because I didn't understand that, I say that I didn't start keto until September of 2016, but really I started in August as soon as I got those pictures and had seen that webinar. I mean, that happened within a week of each other, so I started pretty immediately. When I started keto, I was determined to do it the best that I possibly could, because if it failed, and I was pretty sure it wasn't going to work, but if it failed, I would know that it was the diet that failed, that wasn't me that failed the diet.
Mm, you've given it your best shot.
I was determined to make it work, you know, and then I would say, ha ha, keto doesn't work either. No other diet is going to work. But guess what? It worked. And that was so, I mean, it was like, I didn't get on the scale. I didn't go to the doctor's office. I didn't weigh. I haven't had a bathroom scale in my house for probably 10 years. I did finally start measuring. I did have bust, waist, and hip measurements prior to starting keto because I had measured myself for a dress, but I didn't start measuring until my pant size started dropping. And the first thing that I noticed was my pants started getting longer. So like my size 22s were stretch jeans, you know, and I just didn't fill them out as much. So they started getting longer because I was narrower, and my pajama pants started getting longer. So I'm like, wow, something is changing. And my waist felt slimmer. And so by, started in September, by Thanksgiving, I was down to a size 18. By Christmas, actually by January, I was in a size 16. When my husband and I took that trip to Costa Rica, I was in a size 16. My goal was to be a size 14, which is where I was in high school before I started creeping upward. And I thought that was probably my ideal size, because as a teenager, that's pretty much where I tended to hover, or I felt comfortable at a size 14. In February, when we got back from our trip to Costa Rica, the end of January, 1st of February, I went shopping and bought some size 16 dresses because I had a wedding that I was going to attend. Came home from that wedding and noticed that my size 16 jeans were getting too big. And I'm like, I've got to go buy myself some 14 jeans. I'm going to make it. I'm going to get to be a size 14. So I went to the store and I bought exactly the same pair of jeans that I had on that were 16. I bought the same pair in a size 14 and didn't try on. I just took them home, and I didn't have time that day. And so I took them home, put them on, and the 14s were too big. I had to go back and exchange them for 12s. And so I completely and totally missed my size goal. I tend to not focus on weight because, like I said, I've always weighed more than I look like I weigh. And I feel like weight is such a poor measure of our health and, you know, of our size and of our emotional health. The scale is so awful to us. So I tend to stay off the scale and not talk about how much weight that I've lost. But I was measuring and I was getting smaller. But yeah, I completely missed my goal. I never made it there. So I went straight from a 16 to a 12. And then like a month or so later, the 12s were getting too big. So I went back and bought 10s. And by about June or July of the, you know, I've been almost about 10 months on keto, I was down to a size 8. And then by October, I was in a size 6. So it took me about a year to get from a 22 to a 6. Correct. And that's where I've stayed. I'm like a size 4, 6 US. I've never been a size 6 since I've been an adult size, and I've never been a 6 in my life. And I never thought I would be this size. It just blows my mind that I'm this little. And yes, I still do have lipedema. I still do have a disproportion between my upper body and my lower body, but my lipedema tissue is not rock hard anymore. The nodules are smaller, and you can actually separate them and feel them rather than them being a big mass. and I don't have the pain in them that I used to have. My legs don't hurt. My arms don't hurt. It doesn't hurt if somebody comes up and pats me on the shoulder. It doesn't hurt if a cat walks across my lap. It doesn't hurt if I've got a baby bouncing on my lap, which all of that hurt before. If my kids were laying next to me on the couch and they pushed their feet into my leg, I would just about come unglued. And no longer do I have that pain. The swelling is so much better. I'm able to wear my wedding rings. I took my wedding rings off when I was pregnant with my daughter when I was 18. I was 19, I guess, when I had to take my rings off. And I haven't been able to wear them since. And my wedding rings are actually a little bit too big now. So the swelling is better in my hands. And I assume I've lost fat too, but I think a lot of it fluid. My shoe size, I used to always wear a wide shoe and now my feet are narrow. Regular shoes are almost too wide. And I never knew that I had narrow feet. My shoe size didn't change by a whole lot. I'm down to a 9.5 from a 10, but my feet are long and skinny. So I have big hands, I have big feet, but I'm skinny. I've never been this way before in my life. And the cool thing is I've been able to maintain it. My weight and my size have been steady now for a full 2 years. I've been keto 3 and they've been steady for a full 2 years. So it's fantastic. It's just unbelievable. And it's unbelievable how much better I feel. I should have felt like this when I was in my 20s and I was miserable through my 20s. So it's just really amazing.
Yes, it really is. I was going to ask you, because it's obvious from what you've been describing that you've lost weight and you've lost size. But yes, my question was, what was the difference with the lipedema? And it sounds like there's been a vast improvement there. What is it about keto, do you think? I mean, the thing that springs to my mind is the anti-inflammatory effect.
Right.
But you probably know better in detail exactly why specifically does keto help with lipedema?
We don't know for sure. And of course, we don't have adequate scientific trials to show that it does. But anecdotally, it seems to work for most women with lipedema. And I really think the anti-inflammatory effect is a huge thing. I think that the ketogenic diet, in fact, there have been studies done that show that the ketogenic diet does improve lymphatic flow. So it improves lymphedema. Mm-hmm. And there is a lymphatic component to lipedema. Later stages of lipedema also have lymphedema. They call it, lymphedema with lipedema or lipedema with lymphedema. So it does improve lymphatic flow for some reason. But I also think that there is a hormonal component, like we've talked about, and I think keto helps to balance our hormones as well. I think, you know, a lot of women have experienced that, you know, that they couldn't get pregnant before and now they're able to get pregnant or whatever the case may be. I think it does affect our hormones. I think it improves blood flow. There may even be the possibility that the leaky capillaries in our venous system and our capillary arteries maybe are leaky and cause some fat to develop in lipedema women. And so fixing the damage that's done to the glycocalyx within the vessel walls, that may be a component. There's so many possibilities of why keto may help with lipedema. And I think it's not just one thing. I think many, many, many things that truly do help.
Yeah, it's quite often that, isn't it? It's a combination and a cumulative thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, I can remember when I've looking about what lipedema is and images and different things, and they talk about the different stages to help identify whether you might have it.
Right.
Is it always a progression through those stages, or can you get to a certain stage and stop there? Can keto help you in that progression if it is always progressive? How does that part of it work?
Well, yes. So lipedema is progressive. And the last stage, of course, stage 4, has the lymphatic involvement. And a lot of women lose their mobility when they get to that stage. As far as if you're like a stage 2, will you eventually become a stage 4? Maybe, maybe not. But if you don't do anything, then probably so. You know, you'll probably get there. As far as how fast it progresses, you know, some people it happens very, very quickly. They progress through the stages quickly. Some women not so quickly, like they might stay at a stage 2 for years and years and years, and then menopause hits and all of a sudden they're a stage 4. And so that part is not well known either. I do believe, and I probably will get a lot of backlash for saying this, but I do believe that keto can help halt and maybe even reverse your lipedema stage. Mm. I know of women who have said that via their doctor's staging, you know, doctors that they see who do know and treat lipedema, that they were a stage X and now they're a stage X, that they were a stage 3 and now they're a stage 2, you know, they were a stage almost 4 and now they're a stage 2. So via personal stories, anecdotal evidence, there are women who have reversed their stages of lipedema using a ketogenic diet. So it's very exciting.
Absolutely. If you can do that by changing what you eat.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just by changing what you eat. Is that not amazing that we have the power to do
Absolutely.
This just by changing what we eat?
Yeah. And talking about that, you mentioned earlier that you have a very low carb threshold.
Right.
So I'd be interested to hear not only what your keto looks like now, has there been a change from when you started? Have you seen any change in what you can include in your keto diet?
Oh, well, definitely. When I started eating keto, I actually took a very different approach, and it was kind of liberating when I started it, because the message that I got was it didn't matter how many calories you ate, just get your carbs down below 20. And concentrate on that until you get past the carbohydrate cravings. And then the don't cheat. That was the other bit of advice that I got that made all the difference. So I was counting carbohydrates, trying to keep below 20, but I was eating all day long, every day for probably the first 4 to 6 weeks. Anytime I had a craving, or I thought I was hungry, or I wanted something to eat, I ate. I just ate something I knew I could have keto-wise. So I was eating things like cheese and salami and pepperoni. And I would take a slice of the hard salami and spread cream cheese on it, put a kosher dill pickle in the middle and roll it up and eat it. I was eating olives. I fixed salads with olive oil and vinegar dressing. I tried doing some of the keto bread substitutes, and most of them were lackluster for me, or keto dessert substitutes. And it's like, that didn't satisfy that. I'm going to eat something else. And besides that, I thought the carbs aren't worth it. You know, it wasn't worth the carbs. And flaxseed made my gut feel icky. It didn't give me diarrhea or anything. It just made me feel bloated and kind of not good in my gut region. So I just kind of stayed away from those things. But the longer I practiced keto, I think the more, when I got past those carbohydrate cravings, now all of a sudden I'm like, okay, let me see if I can just fast for 26 hours. You know, I had power over food that I didn't have before. And so now I was seeing how far I could push myself into doing different things eating wise and see how the changes would happen in my body. So I've done carnivore. I did a very strict carnivore protocol for a little experiment that a friend of mine and I did. And it was very successful, but it was also very restrictive. And it's not something that you would want to do for, you know, a regular everyday eating plan. So yeah, when I started keto, I was eating a lot more vegetables and I was eating a lot more, just eating a lot more in general. And now I'm not as hungry, so I don't eat as much. And I tend to stay very light on vegetables and very meat and fat heavy. I do much better if I have more fat and fewer carbohydrates. So I love things like ribeye steak. Prime rib is my absolute favorite with butter. I do seafood, pretty much any meat and seafood that you can think of. I do a lot of eggs. I'll cook 4 strips of bacon, and in the bacon grease, I'll scramble 4 eggs and stir the whole time that I'm cooking so that the fat emulsifies into the egg. And then I'll have that with...
I do that with butter.
Do you?
I have tried it with bacon fat. I just didn't like it. Any kind of other fat in scrambled egg, I just didn't like it. Had to be butter. I discovered that when I tried carnivore for a while, because my typical breakfast was bacon and scrambled eggs. And I just, I had to give up. I had to switch to fried eggs instead. Fried eggs in bacon fat, absolutely delicious.
Oh, yeah.
But scrambled, for me, it has to be butter. But yes, that same emulsification process. Delicious. Just load it up.
Emulsification of the fat. Yeah, you're taking like 3 to 4 tablespoons of fat and emulsifying it in, you know, 4 eggs. Usually a tablespoon per egg is the ratio that I use. But, you know, I'll cook that and I'll eat that with a slice of cheese and bacon, you know, all together. Like you'd go to McDonald's and get a bacon, egg and cheese sandwich, only mine's not a sandwich. It's on my plate and I eat it with a fork. So yeah, I've become much more carb restrictive. I've also found the freedom to experiment and change things up and you know, challenge myself eating wise in ways that I never would have been able to do before. So I had to break that carb addiction that I had in the beginning. And yes, it was a psychological addiction, but I believe it was mostly a physiological addiction, because once I got became fat adapted or keto adapted and knew that I was there, I was free to kind of eat whatever I wanted, you know, within the realms of low carb foods. And I felt good doing it. And that's been the most, like, I still get teary eyed thinking about it. And it's so stupid, but I starved myself for 25 years and now I can eat. And I eat a lot. I can put people to shame by how much I can eat. If I'm hungry and it's, you know, I've been fasting for 12 or 14 hours, I can sit down and eat a big meal and not feel a darn bit guilty about eating it. You know, I don't feel a bit guilty for shoving my mouth full of bacon and eggs and ribeye steak. I can go order a whole 8 or 10 ounce ribeye and eat the whole thing, you know, when I'm on a feasting mode.
Absolutely. Well, the proof is in the pudding, isn't it?
Right, so. Exactly. Exactly. And people look at me like I'm nuts. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't care how you look at me anymore because I can eat. It's like, yes, I can eat. It's like a blessing from heaven. I can eat and I don't have to feel a darn bit guilty about what I'm eating. So
yeah, good for you.
It's so wonderful.
Well, and it's that time of year when a lot of people struggle
right.
a bit with keto. And I happen to know you might have something to help them with that. So why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So I love to cook. And I own a bakery, which is, you know, irony of all ironies. But I also do.
Yes, because you do. I see. I follow you on Facebook. And, and I see you produce these beautiful cakes. I mean, they
Thank
are
you.
Absolutely fabulous looking. But of course, not keto. I can remember asking you a long time ago when we first started talking, you know, how you cope with that.
Right.
Because I'd find that very, very difficult, but maybe it's just a question of getting used to it. I don't know. How do you cope with it?
In the beginning, it was that determination to do it right, you know, because I had, like I said, I had that determination, I do this right. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even take one bite. And then that whole thing, do not cheat at all, that was ground into my brain, you know, don't cheat. This is how you get past the carbohydrate cravings. You don't add any carbohydrates or any sugar to your mouth. Even a taste can spike your insulin, which is going to kick off more cravings. So I had that teaching in the beginning, and that was excellent teaching that I had to start this way of eating. But once I got past the cravings, they weren't there anymore. But yeah, cakes are my art. So, you know, a painter doesn't think about eating his paint.
Good perspective.
So I don't think about eating my art either. I also don't think there's any point in making something that doesn't taste good, but I know how to make it taste good without tasting of it myself. So, you know, my cakes aren't just beautiful, but they are tasty too. But there's no temptation for me. I would much rather have that steak. That makes me hungry. Seeing that ribeye, I don't know if you saw the picture of the prime rib that I cooked on my Facebook page that I just did a couple of days ago. That's what makes my mouth water now. Seeing a cake, it's like, eh, whatever, you know. I really don't want a taste of it. And I'll tell you the other big motivator, and I haven't even touched on this. This is such a big part of my story, and I haven't even mentioned it, is that I don't have migraine headaches anymore. Before, not only did I have lipedema, but I had debilitating migraines, had 20 plus migraine days a month. And in fact, so much so my doctor wanted me to file for Social Security disability because of my migraine headaches. And I was in clinical trial after clinical trial, every drugs. I did the Botox injections. I had DA45 dihydroergotamine, like the ergotamines that make people crazy that grow on wheat. I would inject them for migraines. It was probably about a month into keto. I woke up one morning and I thought, that's kind of weird. I don't have a headache. How long has it been since I've had a migraine? I don't have a headache today. And I still don't have one. So you know what tastes better than cake? No migraines. Yeah. That's what tastes better than cake. And so knowing that if I were to start eating carbohydrates again, that pain that I had day in and day out would come back. I don't want to go back to that. I don't want to live like that anymore. So that's probably my best motivation. So, you know, if you need to be motivated to stay on keto, that's a good motivation. Mm. So you ask me about, you know, my hints for the holidays. I actually just wrote a cookbook, helped write a cookbook. People have been after me ever since I started keto to start publishing some of my recipes. So through the Lipedema Project, Lipedema Simplified, where I'm also a keto coach, the team of ladies that work together with women who have lipedema, we've put together a holiday cookbook. A lot of the recipes are mine. Some of them are from one of my friends who owns or who is the general manager of a restaurant in the town where I live.
Nice.
That they have a full keto menu. So he contributed a few recipes, and some of the other of our coaches contributed some recipes. We have a clinical nutritionist who helped oversee it and write a lot of the information on keto within it. but it's called Keto-licious for the Holidays.
Oh, great name. I like that.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? Well, they stole it from me because I called my green bean casserole Keto-licious green bean casserole. And and so Catherine's like, that's a great title for this book. Let's just put it there. So we're going to come out with more cookbooks. This is the first one in the series, but it focuses on it's a little more liberal than what we would consider the optimal keto for lipedema, because we have included some recipes that do include some things like almond flour, some bread substitutes, and so forth. Because I think the key to getting through the holidays is giving yourself permission to have the pumpkin pie, give yourself permission to have the stuffing, but make it a keto version that's a healthier version for you, knowing that you're going to get back to that more strict keto once the holidays are over. And also knowing that those foods aren't going to set off the carbohydrate cravings like the real thing will. So if I can eat a keto pumpkin pie with xylitol or erythritol for the sweetener and an almond flour crust, and it'll keep me from eating a regular pumpkin pie, or it's going to keep me away from that other dessert table. So our Thanksgiving at my mom and dad's house, we had an entire keto table of casseroles, an entire keto table of desserts, because not only do I do keto, but my husband joined me eating this way, my mom joined me eating this way, and my daughter eats this way with me. My 17-year-old son, my teenage son, actually mostly eats keto. He still eats a few carbs from time to time, but most of us do eat very, very low carb, if not fully keto.
And what results has your mom seen?
My mom lost from a size 10, 12 to a size 4. Wow. And her swelling is so much improved. Her legs are slimmer. She doesn't have the pain that she had in her legs before. So even though she didn't have a lot of weight to lose, she did lose the little bit extra that she had accumulated. And she sees much improvement in her pain. She also sees great improvement in her cognitive. She's 70, so she's able to think more clearly. That is when she doesn't cheat and eat a carb from time to time. But if she's with me and she stays on the straight and narrow, she does really great.
Fantastic. Well, we've mentioned all sorts of resources and some great information. We'll put them all in the show notes.
Okay, great.
I'll make sure I get everything from you so people will be able to find and buy your cookbook, will be able to find you, will be able to follow you, will be able to find all the lipedema resources that we've mentioned. We'll put them all in the show notes so it's easy for someone to find. They haven't got to worry about writing it down while we're talking.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Daisy.
Well, I found it fascinating listening to what you've got to say and hearing about your story. So I'm sure everyone at home will have too.
Yeah.
Perhaps you could leave us with a top tip.
A top tip. Well, I don't know. What do you want me to talk about?
I guess my advice for people, if they're stuck on a top tip, is something that you come back to, you know, on a day-to-day basis, maybe. Something that inspires you, something that helps motivate you. You've probably got one of those sayings or something that you say to yourself that you live by, something like that.
Okay, I've got one. My top tip, and this is something that I always tell my coaching clients, is give yourself a lot of grace. Don't beat yourself up if you make that mistake and lick that spoonful of brownie batter. Say, I forgive myself of that. I'm going to start fresh from right now. I'm not giving myself permission to continue to follow that path, but I forgive myself of that past action and continue to move forward. Because what matters with the ketogenic way of eating, eating for your health, doing anything for your health, is forward motion. Always give yourself grace so you can forgive it and move on.
Yes, because it's very easy, isn't it? I was thinking as you were saying that then, well, I've done that, so maybe you were making those brownies for something or other in the afternoon, and you think, oh, well, I've done that now.
Right.
You know, I might as well have some of those brownies with my tea.
Exactly.
You know? And then I might as well have something else. And then it might be, well, it happened to be a Friday, so, well, I might as well go the whole weekend. And before you know it.
Exactly. And all of that, I believe, stems from the guilt and the blame that you put on yourself from the one mistake. Mm. You know, I've already screwed up, so I might as well, I'm already a screw up, so I might as well continue to screw up.
Yeah.
But if you go, I'm human, I made that mistake, and don't use it as permission to continue to make mistakes, but say, okay, that was a mistake, but I'm not going to make that one again. I'm going to move on.
Mm. Well, thank you. It's been a great pleasure, Mendy. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Daisy.
And I hope you have a very happy holidays eating deliciousness out of your keto cookbook.
Oh, of course I will. You bet I will. And feeding people is my thing. You know, that's my thing. So if you ever make it to the US and you're in the center of the US, you're going to have to come and let
Absolutely.
Me cook for you.
I would love that.
It's a family tradition to be hospitable and to cook people enjoyable food. So
fantastic. Well, enjoy it with your family and friends.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mendy. It's been a great pleasure.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com.
This week's quote is from Casey Neistat. Without a goal, you can't score. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.